and welcome to the inaugural edition of So What? This is Howie Mellon. I'm here today with Jeremy Faust, who is attending at Brigham Women's and Children's and director at Harvard Med School. And we're going to be talking a little bit today. Jeremy, let me give you a case to start off our day. So you get this patient who comes in. They got some belly pain, really tender to palpation, in the right lower quadrant, you know, right at the good old McBurney's point. In fact, they've got a positive psoas sign and a positive Rossbigs. And you call over, your resident comes over and says to you, you know, I want to get a CT scan. I think this is an appy. And you say, okay, it's policy, we're going to get a CT scan. And here comes the call from lab. Patient's 60 years old, hasn't had a creatinine done in a while, and they want to wait for labs. And your resident is kind of pushing on you and saying, hey, look, why do we really got to wait for labs? We got a lot of people in the waiting room. Doesn't really matter. I've read all this stuff on social media. It does not matter. Let's just send him to the CT scanner. So do you back your resident's play on this? Do you let him go straight to the CT scanner?
Howie, it's great to be here on your show. I've been listening to you talk for years and learned so much. And so now I'm going to just pollute your mind. So the first thing I would say on any discussion about cutting-edge practice, whether it's contrast nephropathy or any other thing that's hot, is just marketing. Marketing, marketing, marketing. To my residents, I always will tell them, don't cite the foam blog. It's not that it's wrong. It's not that Scott Weingart or Foamcast, which is my show with Lauren Westerfer. It's not that we're idiots. We are idiots. That's not the point. It's that we based all those things based on some clinical practice, but a lot of it is based on evidence, our read of the evidence. So whenever we do a show and we say, hey, look, there's a new article on XYZ, we're talking about things that we didn't make up. So I say go back, read the original papers, read the meta-analysis, read the Cochrane, and yeah, definitely, you know, a little cliff notes, a little spark note review, the foam is good for that. But I always say you're never going to convince anyone because they told, you know, Jeremy Faust and Lauren Westerfer said that contrast nephropathy is not a thing. So marketing-wise, I always say start with the literature. That's number one. Second thing is, where do you have these debates? Do you have this debate in the clinical context in the moment, or do you have it actually in some meeting? And I mean, Howie, you know how this works, right? I mean, decisions are made in meetings, they're not made in the pit. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Oh, it's a fair assessment, but I think you're hedging the question.
Okay, so then I'm sweating, man, because you're always fighting between reality in like the sort of foam world and then the reality of my hospital. Now, if my resident says, I want to skip the creatinine, I don't care. I love that because let's talk about the literature. So philosophically, I would say if you can convince the radiologist to skip, I'm on board. And I'm even happy to say, you can say my attending said it was okay to skip. And the reason I think that's okay is that I think the literature bears out the idea that contrast-induced nephropathy may be a zebra or a unicorn or it's sort of a thing that might exist in the universe, but it's not in the level that we're led to believe. I don't think that if you push contrast on into a patient, their kidneys get boxed and explode. And there are a lot of papers that would say that's true. And if you want me to go over a couple of them now, I'm very happy to.
Well, wait, before you do that, let me twist the case. So the radiologist says, your call, Dr. Faust, you're signing off on this. I don't care what you do. And it turns out that maybe this guy's got a GFR of 30. Do you still do it?
First of all, you're a jerk for picking 30 because 30 is like the great cutoff, right? If between 30 and 60, some people will do sort of a modified contrast bolus. They'll say a little bit less contrast. That's how we do it at our hospital. And if 60 or greater, we don't care what's going on. You can get the full load. And under 30 or 29... then they're going to get a non-con. So for us, 31 gets a modified dose, a reduced dose. Now, that's somewhat evidence-based, and we can debate whether or not that's even necessary. If contrast-induced nephropathy doesn't exist, that doesn't matter. But so again, I'm hedging.
So put your money where your mouth is. So, I'm the radiologist, Dr. Faust. I'll do it however you want. Your resident has convinced me that this isn't there, but I'm not willing to sign on the dotted line. So I'm going to document a conversation with you in the patient's chart, and you personally be responsible. You're going to give them contrast or not?
So you're going to strangle me because I'm going to hedge, but I'm going to give you two situations, one in which I say yes and one in which I say no. But you're still going to strangle me.
It's
palpable. So if this is, let's say I've got my labs back, the white count's kind of normal-ish, I know the guy's not perf. You know, let's say he's not making a lactate. You know, he looks a little bit, he looks appy. He's got the appy fumes coming off. You know what appies kind of look like? You know, you got the little, like, weird kind of squirrely look to them. but he's not septic, he's not in shock, he's not perfed, then I don't really need to get a letter from my chair saying you screwed up and you did a creatinine, you skipped the creatinine, because the guy's not sick. But if I have a patient who I think is actually in septic shock or near septic shock, they're really, I have a time-dependent process.
Aortic dissection.
Well, that's an easy one. But an appy even. Let's say I got a guy with a 25 white count appy, and he's febrile, he's tacky, his lactate's like 4. And yeah, I'm skipping the contrast because source control is what this guy needs. And so any low risk, if contrast-induced nephropathy exists, any low risk of that even happening is so low that the number of hours this guy, the number of minutes this guy waits to go to the OR actually matters. So I'd say skip it in that case.
Okay, so let me take it back, because as you point out, a lot of the problem with some of the foam stuff, especially with residents and the more cutting-edge stuff, the time that you need it isn't the time to have the discussion, right? We got to have some other discussions. But you keep on hedging with if it doesn't exist or does it exist. So my question to you, yes or no? We're going to treat you as a hostile witness. Does it exist?
It exists in the way that anaphylaxis to certain drugs exists. Like, it can occur, but it is such a low probability thing that, like, I can give people Macrobid without ever having given it to them before, because the one in a million that the anaphylactic to it is not worth testing for. So it, as an entity, I think it exists. But I think that as an entity that exists in the way that we think it exists, like 1 in 20, 1 in 100, no way. You still?
No, I'm going to beg you a little bit, because actually the number is probably closer to 1 in 8,000 doses of antibiotic lead you to a hospitalization of some kind. But that's beside the point.
Right.
Let's go back to our original question. Do you feel comfortable enough that if your chair asks you to champion removing contrast from your institution, if your chair said, all right, Jeremy, I'm sending you to a meeting. You're going to sit down with the radiologists, and you're going to discuss this. Would you put your money where your mouth is there?
Yeah, right. It's like look the defendant in the eye and decide, am I going to take on the case?
Yeah.
And for contrast-induced nephropathy, like getting rid of these protocols.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would do that. I think I would take that as a client. I would say, okay, here's my read of the literature. Here's my read of the guidelines from the radiologist, and we got a great new paper in Annals, looked at 60,000-plus patients. I'm going to say that we have built this house of protectiveness around our kidneys for this entity that probably doesn't need to be there. And so I'd be happy to get on a committee and say, here's my read of the literature and why the risk is so exceedingly low that we don't need to treat this any differently than any other very, very, very rare thing.
Now, you brought up the radiologist, and I think that's an important point for our listeners here, because the idea is to kind of synthesize down to the brass tacks of what's out there in the social media world. And the reality on this one is the radiologists, if they actually read their own literature, and I understand it's tough to get them to do that. I find personally, if you get some Tesla catalogs and you just slide the literature in there, it improves the reading. But if you've got the literature and you get it to them, their own literature says, don't wait.
Yeah, this is the maddening part, right? We don't want to be the squeaky wheels. Like in emergency medicine, we like to fancy ourselves as some of the progressive people. Like, we don't worry about putting a little lido with epi into your fingers. That's bubkis. We can do these things. And we know from our practice that there's lots of things that are sort of hand-me-downs from, you know, old textbooks that we know are kind of bubkis. So, right, we don't want to be behind the radiologists on this one. This one bothers me. Actually, the radiologists have come out and they've said things like, iodine is not an allergen. So anyone who says they have an iodine allergy is actually, they may be allergic to something else in the contrast, but anyone who lists iodine as an allergy must not have a thyroid, right? So the radiologists actually are great on this, and I see lots of emergency physicians and other specialties really have not thought about that, and it drives me a little bonkers. So yeah, the fact that there are some really strong statements coming out of the colleges of radiology and various expert groups, and that we haven't yet pick this up. We do seem to focus on other areas for quality improvement or for moving things forward, but this one seems to have sort of not been as aggressive, and I'm actually optimistic that'll change. And the reason I'm optimistic is for a kind of a sad reason, which is I think as things move forward, we're going to be under increasing scrutiny with our length of dispositions. I know that's already a problem in some areas, and I work in an academic place where it's a little less pressure, but there's still a pressure. And one thing that slows the heck down is waiting for a creatinine and then finding out, oh, geez, you know, the creatinine is 1.5. Well, let's hydrate them and then recheck it. And I think that when you realize that this thing is not worth chasing most of the time, it's a good argument to say to anyone who's looking at metrics or you know, flow in your department, look, I can guarantee you that we're going to not have this problem anymore.
What I find maddening is that what you just said is most of the time, and the problem is the sicker they are, the faster I need the dang contrast, right? So the idea that we can go fast on the sick ones, but let's do it on the well, you know, that's kind of not the point. If they can take a 0.5 bump in their creatinine, if that even occurs, then I really don't care if I cause it, right? Yeah. If I send you home and you go from a 1.5 to a 2 transitionally, and it comes back down on its own, so what?
Yeah, and this is something that we actually haven't really delved into, and I think with the time we have left, I'd love to spend a minute on it. Why do I think that contrast-induced nephropathy may or may not exist, or at least, you know, is not a big deal? And one of the things that I think the literature bears out, and please read the papers, McDonald had a great study in 2014, the Hinson study, and that was in radiology, Hinson's in Annals right now. If you look at a couple of things that might tell you, might give you some information if there's signal. And one of them is patients who were sick, who got contrast or not contrast, had the same rate of acute kidney injury. So it must not have been the contrast, right? And then even on that, like, what's the percentage of people who we think were told had contrast-induced nephropathy? Of that number, a very small number needed dialysis or any other renal replacement therapy. Of that number, an exceedingly smaller number than that needed to have had a bad outcome like death. If you look at something like a CTPE, the contrast load on that is significant, but the need for dialysis from that in a patient who may or may not have had this condition is exceedingly small, much smaller than the missed PE or the patient who you're worried about, right? And then it's just, it kind of drives me a little crazy that, like, we play those numbers game, but we're actually not looking at it. The real place where you might ever see this ever might be in the CT coronaries. The cardiologists are putting a ton of dye in when they're doing these cardiology procedures. This is not a CTPE. So even for the things that we're doing, there's just no way that we're clinically putting our patients at risk at a higher rate than, say, delaying definitive care for an actually dangerous condition.
So what I think I'm hearing you say is you think this is ready for prime time, but the time is not in the pit.
Correct, right. And the one thing that I think is missing that we're never going to get is a randomized control prospective trial, because how could you, given that people think that this unicorn exists, there's no equipoise. You can't, like, randomize half the group to not get contrast or to get contrast or not get, to have a delay in their diagnosis or not. That would never pass an IRB. So are we there yet? And I think that the number of patients in the retrospectoscope is now big enough that, yes, I think this is as good as we're ever going to get.
Well, and I think that one of the things we have to keep in mind, and as you point out, we need to read the papers. I would encourage everybody to also read the American College of Radiology's guideline on this, where they basically say, yeah, we're not convinced that it's there either. And if it exists, you know, there's really not an arbitrary number to use as a cutoff, and perhaps, you know, it's just something worth keeping in mind. Interestingly, you know, I had a dear friend who tried to do a lit review to see if there was any reports of permanent dialysis thought to be related to contrast-induced nephropathy, and could not find anything in the literature ever that suggested that there was permanent dialysis solely caused by contrast-induced nephropathy.
Yeah, and you look at some of these studies, they included people who had bad kidneys to begin with, and even they didn't have a higher rate. So, you know, or the diabetic patients you're supposed to look out for, the older patients. But again, to your point, I think it's a great one. These are the very patients who are generally sick enough that you can't delay the diagnosis. I really do not want to miss the perforated appy in this patient. And quite frankly, yeah, I know you can do antibiotics and these kind of things, but there are a lot of conditions that your scan is going to change their immediate management. And, you know, just this whole notion of, like, admitting them for a VQ scan, you know, hours and hours later, and meanwhile this like sick older person has like a clot burden that's increasing, I'm not comfortable with that. So I do think that with the two things that may drive these sort of meetings to get different departments together to make policies, one will be just to speed the process, you know, dispo times, let's get better. And I think one of them is going to be M&Ms, like, well, why did this patient, someone's going to die. And it's going to be, well, why did this patient not have a scan like 5 hours ago? It's like, well, because their creatinine was like 1.6. And someone's going to say, we need to stop at that because, honestly, it's, you know, why save one death in exchange for three?
Absolutely. And I think that that's the key point. We always need to look at what is the missed opportunity when we do these things. Because when you look at it strictly from the one side, you lose that perspective of what's the delay in care going to cost us? What's the delay in treatment time going to cost us? I really appreciate you taking time to talk with us today. For the question is, so what, does it matter? Yeah, I think this one does, and I think this is worth fighting for. This is fighting the good fight for all of our patients. So, Jeremy, I really appreciate you being here on this inaugural episode of So What. I can be reached on Twitter at Dr. Howie Mell. That's at DrHowieMell. Or, of course, you can email me at howie.mell@gmail.com. And, Jeremy, we can find you on foamcast.org, right?
Foamcast.org, at Foam Podcast, and I'm on Twitter at Jeremy Faust. Howie, thanks, man.
Thank you.